We are continuing our study of the 44th Psalm. Last time we'd gotten through the 8th verse of this psalm. And the theme of this psalm is that the author of the psalm is describing a situation in which the nation of God is in a terrible state of distress. Many persons think that this is describing the Babylonian captivity, and it very likely could be. It also is relating to the New Testament church because part of it is quoted in the New Testament as applying to the church. And here again, this would be a time of the church in which it was in a state of distress, a state of persecution. It seems from the quotation and the way that it's used in the New Testament that it did apply to the early church during the time of the apostles. And certainly this principle could also apply to the church during the time of its fall. And when it was under the siege of the modern Babylon. We're not sure who the author of this psalm was, but many think that it was one of the sons of Korah. Before the writer, though, gets into the discussion and the description of the present condition of the nation that he was writing about, he first of all gives a review of the former national blessings which God had given them, beginning with verses 1 through verse 8. And that's what we discussed in our first lesson on this psalm, how that God had been their God, and he had taken them into the land of Canaan, and he had dispossessed the people who lived in Canaan because they were wicked, and he had planted his people there, and he had given them this land by his own power. It wasn't by their power or their might, but he then was their God, and he had had a pleasure in them and given them the land of Canaan. And then he further says that through thee we will push down our enemies. Verse 5, through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. For I will not trust in my bow, neither shall my sword save me. But thou hast saved us from our enemies, and thou hast put them to shame that hated us. Talking about times past now. God had been so good to them up to this point. In God we boast all the day long, and praise thy name forever. Selah. Then beginning in the 9th verse, he starts to describe what their present condition is now at the time this psalm is written. He says, but thou hast cast off, and put us to shame, and goest not forth with our armies. This 9th verse begins the second portion of this psalm, the section in which he now describes the plight of the people at the time he wrote it. He says, but thou hast cast off, and this phrase cast off means to be treated with some kind of disgust. God was not pleased with them now, and he treated them in a way to show his displeasure. He was unhappy with his people. He was disgusted with his people, and so he cast them off. And he says, and had put us to shame. This indicates that they now were not victorious in their battles. They were not able to gain the victory. They were defeated. They were in a state of shame and disgrace. They were in a state of absolute submission to their enemy. And it was because God had turned his face against them. God was not for them now. God was not aiding them. He was not treating them the way that he had in times past because they were guilty of turning from God. He says, and goest not forth with our armies. You're not going with our armies now like you used to. You're not giving us the victory now like you used to give us the victory. There's been a change made here, and he's describing this change. And of course, this did happen when the Babylonian army came in and defeated the armies of the Israelites. Josiah was defeated. God didn't give them the victory like he had in the past. And this is clear proof that all their victories in times past had been given them by God. It wasn't due to their own great abilities, but it was simply due to the fact that God was with them and God desired that they have the victory. And when we turn so that God no longer is going to be with us, God no longer is going to give us the victory, then we're going to find that we're going to fall flat in defeat. Verse 10 says further, thou makest us to turn back from the enemy, and they which hate us spoil for themselves. Further description of their inability to wage war, their inability to defend themselves when the enemy did come upon them. Thou makest us to turn back from the enemy. They couldn't withstand this enemy. They had to retreat. They were in a state of defeat. They were in a state of being inferior to this enemy. And he says, "And they which hate us spoil for themselves." And certainly when the Babylonian army came in, they were able to spoil for themselves. That is, they were able to take whatever they wanted of this nation. They could take the people into a state of captivity. They could leave the ones they didn't want. They could take the ones they did want. They could take any of the goods of this nation. And we found that they even went into the temple there and sacked it and took those precious articles of the temple back to Babylon. The people were deserted by God because they had deserted God. Their evil king, Jehoiakim, is written about in 2 Chronicles. In 2 Chronicles chapter 36, beginning with the 5th verse, Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he began to reign. And he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord his God. Against him came up Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and bound him in fetters to carry him to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar also carried of the vessels of the house of the Lord to Babylon, and put them in his temple at Babylon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim, and his abominations which he did, and that which was found in him, behold, they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah, and Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his stead. So we see there that it was wickedness that was at the base of this. This is why God didn't be with them in their battles. This is why God made them turn back from the enemy. And this is why those which hated them were able to spoil for themselves. They even took the vessels out of the temple and carried them over to Babylon and put them in the temple over there. What a desecration of the things of God. The holy articles that were used in the worship to God were now in an idolatrous temple, in the temple of a people that didn't even know the true and the living God. As we've mentioned before, this passage seems to be talking about the captivity and when the people were taken into Babylon. It may have been referring to other events, but it certainly can adequately be explained and fully fulfilled by that Babylonian captivity. This is further described in the 11th verse. Thou hast given us like sheep appointed for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen. Now to be sheep appointed for meat means that sheep that are set aside to be used for meat or to be used for the slaughter. We're just like sheep that have been designated, that we're going to be eaten, we're going to be consumed. That's what our lot seems to be at this time. So, as we know, sheep in this condition have no defense. There's no way that they can change the situation. They do not have any power over their own destiny, but it's a destiny in which they're going to be destroyed. Then he says, "And has scattered us among the heathen." And of course, this is a very adequate description of what did happen during that captivity. They were scattered among the heathen. They were taken out of their own land, and they were distributed in a foreign country and even foreign countries, so that they then did fulfill this very prophecy here, to be scattered among the heathen. And of all the events that happened to God's people, this idea of being scattered among the heathen or being dispersed among the nations is certainly one of the most prevalent and most outstanding things in the history of his people. It didn't just happen in the Babylonian captivity. It's happened other times also. The nation to the north, Israel, had been scattered many, many years before among the Assyrian nation. And we find that this same thing does even happen to the church today. The church is in a scattered condition today. We are simply sojourners here. We do not have any land that we can call our own truly on this earth, except for the kingdom of heaven. And the kingdom of heaven can exist any place. But this phrase of being scattered among the heathen was one that could aptly be applied to the children of Israel in the Babylonian captivity. He further says in verse 12, "Thou sellest thy people for naught, and dost not increase thy wealth by their price." They had been sold, as though sold into slavery, except the price was nothing. There was no good price given in exchange for them. God didn't get anything out of this. He was left with a desolate land, the land that had once been the land of Israel, the land that had once been the land of his people, and when they worshipped him and carried out his will, was now a desolate place, unpopulated, and even to the point of being uninhabitable. Babylon didn't pay anything for them. Babylon didn't give God anything in return. They were not made a great productive people while in Babylon. God didn't get anything really out of that so far as anything that increases wealth was concerned. But things were at the very lowest ebb with his people that they seemed to have ever been in since he brought them out of Egypt. Here was a people that was practically nothing now, and God had nothing in return for it. This idea of being sold into slavery for nothing, being sold for no price, when they really maybe should have had something paid for them, is borne out in the 52nd chapter of Isaiah. In that 52nd chapter, Isaiah is talking about their coming back from captivity. It's a very beautiful and wonderful chapter on that subject. But he says in the third verse of Isaiah 52, "For thus saith the Lord, ye have sold yourselves for naught, and ye shall be redeemed without money." So they had sold themselves for nothing. Any value that they might have had, even that was not even taken into account as they went into this Babylonian captivity. And God says, when you come out, you're going to be brought out without money. God's not going to pay anything for their price. He's not going to pay anything for their return. But the nation who took them into captivity would be destroyed, and they would be released from that captivity, and not having to have anything given for their ransom, anything paid for them, because they went down for nothing, and they would come out for nothing, without money, that is. So, thou sellest thy people for naught. And now the psalmist is describing their plight, their condition, their situation. We've been sold into slavery for nothing. Didn't even get any price for us. And then he says, "And dost not increase thy wealth by their price." God's wealth wasn't increased by whatever was given for this people. Nothing was given truly that God would consider to be valuable. He got nothing valuable out of the Babylonians. He didn't get one convert out of those Babylonians. Evidently, there was nobody left in Israel to carry on the full work of the nation. He had a nation now that was non-existent, so to speak. And so he did not increase his wealth by their price. In verse 13 he says, "Thou makest us a reproach to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that are round about us." He's talking about the surrounding nations. As a result of this captivity, they were looked down upon by all the other nations, even the weaker nations. Idumea, for example, that would not be able to really come up against this nation of Israel on their own. Now that they were captives, now that they were overcome by the Babylonians, they looked down upon them and had no respect for them at all. We're reproached to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that are round about us. All nations now looked upon them as being a nothing, a nobody. No longer did they have any respect for them. No longer did they function as the great, prosperous, and respected nation of Israel. They now were a nothing. They now did not exist. And so the nations round about them had no respect for them. They had no negotiating power. They had no trading power. They had no ability to be recognized even as a nation or as something in existence any longer. And so these nations had absolutely no respect for them. He further says in verse 14 along this line, "Thou makest us a byword among the heathen." Now a byword here means that they had become like a proverb for something that was bad. If you wanted to say anything was not good, or anything was doomed to destruction, or anything had lost its ability to even be, then you compare it with Israel. Israel was a very good crowning example of something that was bad, something that didn't even function anymore. And so they were made a byword among the heathen. And this was prophesied in Deuteronomy 28, verse 37, where they were told what would happen to them if they became unfaithful. And in that verse, It's stated like this, "And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations, whither the Lord shall lead thee." So they were looked down upon. They were given a certain sense of absolute derision. And this didn't happen just to their backs, just to among those nations that were still in existence round about them, but this happened among the heathen, where they were now in captivity. They were regarded as being lowly people. And even today, in the scattering of the Jewish people, we still see that idea prevalent. They do suffer under a very great amount of discrimination. There is a lot of derision. There's a lot of byword or proverbs that relate to the Jewish people in a derogatory sense. And so they still seem to be suffering from this idea of having cast off God, especially now in this age in which they have cast off the Son of God, the Messiah, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He further says in verse 14, "A shaking of the head among the people." That is, the people just were astonished. They were amazed at what had happened to this nation of Israel. It was something that man could never fully explain. And a man couldn't fully understand how they had gotten themselves into this terrible predicament. And so that's the condition they were in now, as he gives this description of them in this area of this psalm. Verse 15, "My confusion is continually before me, and the shame of my face hath covered me. For the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth by reason of the enemy and avenger." When he talks about my confusion, he's talking about his shame. "My shame is continually before me." Here, it's as though a child or any other person has been caught doing something wrong, and now they're openly punished for this wrong so that everyone can see that they are guilty. Everyone can see that they have been caught in the act, and so this is a very shameful situation. And so this whole situation of this nation, the fact that they had been overrun by the enemy, by the heathen, that they'd been hauled away into captivity, and they'd been taken away from their homes and their way of life, their way of religion and all, and just absolutely scattered among heathenistic peoples, was a display for the world to see that here they had been caught in the act of doing something wrong, and they had not repented of it. So this situation that they were in was a continual reminder of them that they were in a shameful state. "So my shame is continually before me." Every day, every hour, they were to be reminded of this fact that here they were in this state, and it was because of something they should have been ashamed of. He further says, "And the shame of my face hath covered me." And this phrase, "shame of my face," means the blush. I'm blushing. It's obvious. It has covered me. As we know, when we do have the ability to feel shame, the body has this peculiar characteristic in which the face will flush with an increased amount of blood, and it will turn a reddish color, and it's obvious to those who look at us that we are then blushing and we are experiencing some kind of shame or displeasure at whatever the situation is that we're in. And so this is what has happened here. It's obvious that I am in a state of shame, for the blush of my face, or the shame of my face, hath covered me. Anyone can look at me and see that I'm humiliated. I'm very uncomfortable about this. And he says in verse 16, "For the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth." Here, while they're in this state of captivity, they hear continually those that are reproaching and blaspheming. To reproach means to bring disgrace upon, to say derogatory things that further puts him down in this state of humility. To blaspheme would be to use cutting words, words that would chide, and words that would cut him down, and words that would continually remind him of this shameful state. This could also mean blaspheming God. The voice of the heathen would also blaspheme God by making fun of him and saying that he didn't have a God or that his God didn't have any strength. And so this was what continually kept his shame at a high pitch. This is what continually kept him in this state of feeling very uncomfortable with his situation. He could never grow used to it because of the voice of him that reproacheth and blasphemeth. And then he says further, by reason of the enemy and avenger. It's because he is continually in contact with the enemy. That was the Babylonian nation and government and power. They were the enemy and they were the avenger. That is, they did come in and destroy the nation of Israel to get revenge upon them because Israel had not really obeyed them and lived up with their treaties like they should have. But it was also because God used them as his tool whenever he got revenge. They were the avenger from the standpoint of God sending them in as his weapon, as God sending them in as the thing he was going to use to get revenge on this people because of their disobedience. And so this phrase, by reason of the enemy and the avenger, certainly does describe the Babylonian forces, that government and that army. They were enemies and they were avengers to this people of Israel. And so all of the foreigners then that had to do with the Babylonian power continually reminded them of the fact that they had been put down, that it was done for a reason, that they had been disobedient children, so to speak, in the eyes of the other nations. And they continually reminded them of their shame, of their humiliation, and of the fact that they then were deserving of this punishment some way or another. We're going to close our lesson at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.